no role plays, just real. Chris and Lorenzo share four decades of combined experience to help you become a more effective leader.
We've never really, as a workforce, spent a lot of time on making sure we're developing good leaders.
We'll be able to share stories, experience, mistakes, failures, successes.
This is Hacking Your Leadership.
Welcome to Hacking Your Leadership. I'm Chris.
And I'm Lorenzo.
And Lorenzo, on this episode, I want to talk about French and Raven's six bases of power.
All right. I like power. Power's cool.
Absolutely. So if you've never heard of this before, this is something that it's been around for a long time, almost 60 years. And this is really important if you're a leader of people, because your power as a leader comes from one of these six places or a multiple of them. And in an ideal situation, maybe it's a multiple of a lot of them as opposed to just one or two. And I want to kind of briefly go over those, and then we can talk about this, because I've had situations in my career where the power I have as a leader is more heavily rooted in one of these than another, and that can feel really tenuous as a leader, like it could go away. And so if you're a leader and you're feeling this, this might be what it's rooted in, and it might be a reason to kind of like do a self-inventory of this and kind of figure this out and change it up. So the six bases of power, according to French and Raven, you have legitimate power, coercive power, expert power, reward power, referent power, and informational power. And, you know, legitimate power is what you've been given formally. So it's your title, basically. You're somebody's boss because you've been given the title. Coercive power is what you can threaten somebody. Expert power is basically you are a subject matter expert. People come to you because you know a lot more than they do. Reward power is what you can give people. You know, like you have the ability to dole out either raises or bonuses or opportunities, and so you have power because you have that. Referent power is what you've earned through admiration. So like you kind of people see you getting rewarded for the things that you're doing, and now you kind of have some influence and power there. And then informational power is what you know. And this is the, you know, you kind of painted a space for yourself within an organization because you really know how to do something well that maybe nobody else knows how to do. And again, if you're a leader of people, you probably have several of these that make up the power you have. So the first thing I want to do, Lorenzo, is ask you, you know, in the roles that you have had, is there one of these or more of these that you feel like has been a larger percentage or larger part of the power you've had as a leader?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think for me personally, I'd probably say expert, reward, and informational are the three that kind of stick out to me. Just based upon, you know, the feedback that I've been given and kind of where I feel most of my ability to influence people mm-hmm. really comes from, is I think those three spaces the most. I obviously, you know, like legitimate power and having the kind of the name tag and the title is helpful, especially in certain situations. But I think that how it's leveraged, how I leverage that, is more, it kind of, it falls into the reward space. So I'll give you an example. One of the things that I know we've talked about on the show before, one of the things that I really make sure that I do quite often is when I want to give somebody recognition for a job well done, I will let them know not just what it was specifically they did, but who told me that they did it if I didn't observe it myself.
Definitely.
So if I'm a leader of leaders and there's other leaders involved, I want that person to know where that came from.
Sure.
Because I know the weight of my legitimate power in my title. If I'm coming out to tell somebody or talk to somebody about a job well done, I know that that can have a much larger effect on how they feel about the work that they're doing. But more importantly, how I can help to, you know, push maybe in and move some of that power to the other leader who was the one that was the advocate of that person is also really, really important, so that they understand and build a relationship and trust with them. That's something that they can kind of go on from a long-term standpoint. So those are kind of the three for me that stick out immediately and that I feel over time that I've kind of learned how to leverage and lean into at certain times.
So, I mean, so those actions are helping to increase the reward power of your leaders who have to lead the rest of the team, and you want to make sure that the relationship there is strong. I think legitimate power is something that I have always had a really tough relationship with, because I have shied away from it a lot. And the reason I've shied away from it is because in my own career, there have been times when I move very quickly, and I'm a doer, and I try to get things done as quickly as I can. And sometimes that can steamroll over people. Sometimes I don't stop to kind of think about whether or not people are coming along for the ride. I assume if they're coming along for the ride that they want to. And if I have legitimate power in a title, that might not necessarily be the case. Maybe they're coming along for the ride because I'm their boss and they feel like they have no choice but to. And that has always worried me, because I want people coming along for the ride because they want to. If for no other reason, then they'll do better work. They'll be more engaged, and the output will be better if they actually want to do it, not if they're doing it because they think they're going to get in trouble if they don't do it. And it's only been recently in my career that I have kind of like tried to make peace with this a little bit, and understood that legitimate power is good sometimes, but only if you own it in the context of the responsibility that you have. And so as a leader of people, if I'm thinking that I have legitimate power, it's not I have legitimate power, so you better do what I say. It's I have legitimate power, which means I have a really heavy responsibility to own these people's growth and development, and that the title of boss or leader or whatever that is not added power necessarily, it's added responsibility. My responsibility is to get this and this and this done, and to own a set of results that have to be delivered, and to be able to do that leveraging the talent and the roles that report up through me. If I look at it in that respect, I feel like I have a better relationship with legitimate power. If I look at it as something to fear or to shy away from, then I think that has hurt me when I've done it in the past. But it's still something I struggle with, because at the end of the day, I really want to make sure people are following me because they want to.
I think it's a great point, and it's something that, you know, I've always told people that people shouldn't follow you because of the title. Like if you have to lean into the title,
right,
or say because I'm the boss or because of this, then you really lost, you know, the entire element of trust in you as a leader.
Sure.
Because they're only doing it because you told them to, versus helping them to understand how it's mutually beneficial in their careers. Now, coercive, I think, is one of the things that I think about quite often. And let me tell you why. Like on an individual basis, if you have to, you know, kind of the terminology is like, what can you threaten, what you can threaten, right? I look at that as like the conversation around like, if you don't do this, you could lose your job. And sure. I like agree, like that's not something that, if you land there as a comment that you have to make, I think there's a lot of work that wasn't done previously. However, I think coercive as a leader is critical to making sure there is direct and consistent accountability across the team, to allow other people on the team to be successful. So if you're not having coercive conversations with people that are not doing their job, they're not showing up for the team, they're not, you know, doing even minimum expectations of the work, if you're not having coercive conversations with them, then what that shows the rest of the team is that you don't have to do the role, or you don't have to meet expectations, and you still get to stick around. I think we talked about this, I don't know, it was a year ago or so, but like what happens when you leave bad performers on a team, and how that can really cause an issue culturally. I look at coercive as the same way. I don't walk around and just tell people, well, do it because that's your job. And if you don't do it, like, that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is, you know, real conversations with people that need to have the conversation had with them, because they are not doing what's expected. They are not, you know, helping the team to get better. They are not showing up in such a way that's good for the business and everything else. So I just bring that up as something that is definitely something that I think a lot about, in the importance of accountability, but done in the right way.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like coercive power done the right way becomes legitimate power. You know, coercive power, if it starts out that way, you know, it is going to erode the trust between you and a member of your team. If it's used correctly, then what you're essentially saying is that you can use it to increase trust between you and the members of your team who are doing their job well, because they see that there is accountability for people who don't do their job well. I see it erodes the culture of teams all the time when people feel like there is a member of the team who is able to kind of get away with not doing their job for a long period of time. And there is this, in many organizations, it isn't an, you know, accountability isn't swift and immediate. It is long and it takes time and it takes several conversations, as it should, because you never know what's causing the downturn in performance to begin with. And I think employees should be given the benefit of the doubt in a lot of situations. But at the end of the day, you do need to make sure that you're not losing the rest of your team by not holding those people accountable. And so if you, just because you have to, you know, quote unquote, threaten somebody with, you know, potentially their job or any type of, you know, punishment that, that could end up losing their job, I don't necessarily see that as by definition always coercive. It could be legitimate power if you're doing it because at a certain point in time, you need to make sure that you're putting the needs of your entire team ahead of the needs of any one individual. And so, you know, I think it's kind of a fine line, because you're right. You know, coercive power is something that it can be a go-to for many leaders because it works. It just only works very temporarily.
And I think, too, in this day and age, we've talked a lot about kind of transparency in the workplace and kind of the ability to bring people along and empower people through giving them more information. So when I look at like the informational aspect of you know, these six bases of power, one of the things that I think is important to call out is that it's, to me, it's not so much about you being the only person to know.
Oh, yes.
Like it had been for a really long time.
Yep.
It's about you being the resource to be able to get people the information they need when they need it and how they need it. And so for me, like, that is something that I've seen right now. It's really kind of transformed or evolved over the last decade or so, is that it's less and less about, do you actually know it verbatim? Are you a subject matter expert necessarily in all these things informationally? There's definitely a value to that. But I think this day and age, the thing that's more valuable for people is being the conduit of getting people to the information they need and how to get that information, how to source that information, how to build the relationships and network so that going forward, they can then get the information they need when they need to get it.
Right, right. We had an episode probably 2 years ago now on the difference between being needed and being truly like where your organization depends on you. And, you know, when you are viewed as a subject matter expert because you freely give the information, if you're a go-to person, but you don't dole it out, you know, kind of in like small portions in order to make sure that you'll always be needed in the future, but instead you are freely giving it out to try to make other people rise to the level that you're at, those are the kind of people that endear themselves to organizations, and organizations find roles for them even when what they were great at doing becomes something that is ubiquitous and now you're not needed in those roles anymore. I know a lot of people in a lot of organizations who, because they're the only one who knows how to do something, or because they're almost a gatekeeper of sorts, they feel like that power that they have is what is ensuring their job security. And I know I've been in rooms where I've had conversations with leadership teams where those people come up as we're in a bad spot because we have to depend on this person. We need to find a way to make it so we don't have to anymore. If your organization feels like they would be truly lost without you, that is a very bad place to be, because they will do their best to not be dependent on you for as long as possible. They'll try to move beyond that very quickly, because no organization should feel dependent on a single person or a very small group of people for a long period of time. And so if you are a person who derives your power from that kind of like, well, people have to come to me, believe me, there are conversations happening about you elsewhere to try to make sure that that doesn't happen very long, because it's not a good place for the organization to be at. Really, really try to make sure that the power that you have is because people want to come to you, and that you are freely giving that away, that you're trying to raise other people up, that you are not gatekeeping the information, but rather trying to, you know, use it to help people along.
Yeah, now let me ask you a question. So all six bases of power here have pluses and minuses in regards to like, how they can be helpful, but sure, also like how maybe overusing them or misusing them can cause issues. Are there any of the six that to you kind of really stick out as, obviously the coercive one, like let's take that one off the table, right? Because
sure,
it's
sure,
like, you know, it, like we've said it before, if your only tool is a hammer and everything, it looks like a nail, right?
Right.
So like that's the easy one. But of the other five, are there any of these that you look at and say like, this is something that, you know, based on that this data and this research was done decades and decades ago, that may look different today, or that may be something that when overused can cause a lot more issues than be helpful?
Yeah, absolutely. So I the reason why I like this topic a lot is because I think all six of these are a part of any leadership, of any leader who is doing their job well. There is an element of all six of these where there needs to be. And depending on the culture, the organization, the time, your own personal go-to, what you're trying to do in the team that you're on, whether this is a well-oiled machine that runs well or a team where you've been brought in to overhaul it and change the culture and to fix something that is failing, all those things go into what type of balance has to be on these six items. And at any given moment or any relationship you have with some of your people or at whatever you're doing in your career, you might have one or two of these weighted more heavily than the other. And you need to be able to draw on all of them. And so when this was written, you know, in 1959, the legitimate power, I would say, would be a much higher part of a leader's role. If you just look at the lack of transparency, the lack of ability to kind of, you know, move on from one organization to another without losing a pension or having huge consequences, you know, this kind of like, you know, what, why you're stuck somewhere, basically, the legitimate power and the coercive power probably play a much stronger, a much larger role in the life of a leader. And as time has moved on, we've moved into a lot of it became the reward power, you know, what you can give to people because people want to feel like they're being rewarded for a job well done. But at the end of the day, rewards don't necessarily imply something that is getting somebody intrinsically motivated to do their best work. It's like, well, I'm going to do this because I'm getting a reward for it. That's fleeting, and it can only last a small amount of time. I think in the current state of how leadership is, I think the last three, referent power, expert power, and informational power, are the ones that I think a lot of leaders have to rely on most in this day and age. If you are truly wanting to lead a team of people who are doing their best work because they're passionate about the work, not because they're trying to get the next cookie, or because they're trying to not get fired, or because they're doing what they have to do. And I don't know what it's going to look like in 10 years. It might balance differently in 10 years. I think if you find yourself relying too heavily on one of these or two of these and not all six, that's when, as a leader, I think I have found kind of a feeling that my power is fleeting, or like at any day someone's going to find out that I shouldn't be here in the leadership role. It's because I haven't really mastered the ability to do all six of these.
Absolutely. And with that, it brings us to this episode's 1 minute hack. But first, a few words from our sponsors.
The 1 minute hack.
All right, for this episode's 1 minute hack, here's what I want you to do. We're going to put a link to a picture of these six bases of power in the podcast description. I want you to look at these six bases of power. I want you to write them all down, and I want you to come up with an example for each one over the last 30, 60, 90 days, not too long, but pretty recently, an example of each one where you have used each one of them in a conversation you've had with one of your direct reports or one of your peers in order to kind of get something done that you needed to get done. Some of them are going to be very easy to come up with, very quickly. Others will be more difficult. If there are any where you can't come up with an example of a time where you used one of these in order to get something done, it probably means that you don't rely very heavily on this one. It might be a more difficult element of the six bases of power for you, and you should try to look at the elements of that particular one and figure out how you can incorporate more of that into your life or into your leadership role, because the more you have the ability to kind of move between them depending on the situation, I think the better leader you're going to be.
Absolutely. I think it's a great 1 minute hack, and just remember, just remembering that balance is so critical from a leadership standpoint, and finding a good balance. And again, a lot of this is going to be based upon the team that you have, the leaders that you have, the cultures that you've built, where certain ones of these may show themselves a lot more often. But at the end of the day, as we mentioned in the show, all of them are absolutely necessary to building a really good, healthy culture that can maintain over time. And all of them are really required when you're in the business of helping to develop leaders. They need to also not only experience all six of these by you as their direct leader, but also be able to show you how they balance the six of these as they continue to grow in their own careers.
Right. And also, your people will know which of these, even if they can't name them, they'll know which of these you derive your power from. And if it's too heavily weighted towards one or two, the lack of the others will be exploited by your people, by the ones who don't want to do a good job and who want to be able to move through their job, with less engagement and less performance, but not be held accountable to it.
Absolutely. And with that, it brings us to the end of this episode. This is Hacking Your Leadership. I'm Lorenzo.
And I'm Chris.
And we'll talk to you all next time.